Hey there, folks. John Henry, real quick, at the top of the show, before we get into things, I am going to add this quick disclaimer in post-production so that everybody who hears the podcast and watches the archive can see and hear it. We are discussing the coronavirus outbreak in this show, and during the course of the show, I offer some advice and some guidance about protection and prevention that has already been wildly misconstrued and misunderstood. I thought that I was being clear, and frankly, I still think that I was being clear, and I do stand by the advice I gave, but I think that just in case it bears a little bit of clarification. Number one, the advice, the guidance that I'm trying to give is intended for vulnerable populations and only vulnerable populations, okay? If you are immune compromised by an HIV infection or by chemotherapy, if you already have a chronic serious respiratory disease, then I'm probably am directing these comments at you. If you're over 75, I am probably directing these comments at you. If you are me, no, that's not who I'm talking to at all, okay? The second thing, the conversation involves a discussion of some pretty scary and terrifying even numbers and worst case scenarios. Folks, these are worst case scenarios. I do not believe they are likely scenarios, but they have a non-zero possibility. And right now there are a lot of open variables and things that we don't understand about this. And it would be irresponsible to pretend that the worst case scenario is entirely out of question, because it isn't. Furthermore, by focusing on that worst case scenario, it helps to bring home the gravity and seriousness of the situation, because right now we have a president who's treating this like it's just a bad strain of the cold, which is ignorant and ridiculous and will kill people if it's not corrected, okay? This is a serious situation and you need to take it seriously. The third thing is with regards to the Centers for Disease Control guidance that's been given, in particular relating to the use of face masks. The Centers for Disease Control actually echo everything that I said last night, almost with the exception that they recommend against the use of face masks to prevent contracting a viral airborne infection. The reason for that is not that they don't work. The reason for that is because we don't want to kill the supply. And we need to make sure that it is, you know, held in reserve for the most exposed and vulnerable populations. The top of that pyramid is the healthcare industry. Doctors, nurses, orderlies, people who are working in hospitals, nursing homes, urgent care centers. They must have these things or they cannot work. And we're going to risk losing some of our healthcare professionals, the people who are trying to make us better, to the infection. That would be stupid. Directly underneath those is those high-risk populations that I was talking about. Okay, this is not the end of the world. We are not all going to start having dreams about Mother Abigail and the walking dude. We're not all going to die. It's not a catastrophe. It's not time to start acting like an end-of-the-world prepper and, you know, stocking up on thousands of pounds of freeze-dried food in your basement. It's not time to go out and buy out the ammunition store down the street because you're worried about roving gangs coming after you. None of that shit, okay? It's just common sense, basic information that probably most of us already understood, okay? But I felt the need to get it out there, and because of the comments that were directed at me last night, there were some points made that I think were valid and bear addressing, and so I wanted to address them at the top of the show so I don't scare the hell out of everybody and cause a run on face masks, right? That's not going to do anybody any good. So thank you very much. Enjoy the show, and I will see you tonight at 8 p.m. for our next live stream on Free For All Friday. Everybody, welcome once again to the John Henry Show. I am John Henry, coming at you directly through a series of tubes from johnhenry.us here on YouTube Live. Of course, you can see, if you are watching, my information there, Twitter at johnhenry_us, website johnhenry.us. You can find me on Facebook, John Henry US, Facebook at I Loved to Wake Up in the Morning When Barack Obama Was President. And of course, you can support independent media in by helping helping me out at paypal.me/johnhenryus. My Patreon is still coming, RSN, as they say, real soon now. I got a couple of exciting things that are going on there that I'm going to talk to you about actually here for just a second. Let me go ahead and get my notes up and see where we are here. Okay, so we covered that. Oh, don't forget the podcast. I am available on Apple Podcasting, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and wherever fine podcasts are delivered. Just some real quick kind of housekeeping and news things. Those of you who have been following since day one here, now we're at our 10th show. I've got to stop using that regal. We get so pretentious. I've been able to make some improvements and changes to the technical layout. And one of the things that I've noticed is that I keep running these little glitches and things like that where my audio will come out of sync and so on and so forth. And so what I've decided I'm going to do is, after I do these streams, I'm going to go ahead and start making it a habit to publish, to edit out and publish a somewhat cleaner version, a cleaned up version, to make sure audio is straight and everything is running the way that it's supposed to. And so you can typically expect to see that either in the overnight hours or in the morning after the show. In the meantime, of course, if you want, you know, I'm going to leave these the live stream archives available, and I'll set those as unlisted videos. So if you've got comments and conversations happening, you don't lose those. But then at the same time, what most people are going to be able to find in the morning is going to be the cleaned up version of things. So you can see behind me, this picture was actually taken in Salt Lake City, in Draper, if you want to get really technical about it, off of the south end of Bangerter at a 7-Eleven looking out over the Salt Lake Valley. And if you look really carefully, it was taken on July 4th. A few years ago, and so you can see all of the fireworks shows going on in the background over there, which I think is kind of neat. So there. That's kind of the housekeeping stuff and the internal messaging and all that other great stuff. Let us get right into the show. We have got a lot to talk about today. Just a couple of quick news points. The United States Marine Corps, a Semper Fi gentleman. My father was a Marine in the early 60s, and so I've always had kind of an affinity for the Corps, and certainly being raised by an E-8 was an experience. So the Marine Corps Commandant General David Berger today announced that the Marine Corps has banned all Confederate symbols from U.S. Marine bases. No more stars and bars, no more worshiping the dead rebel breakaway republic that betrayed their country. I've written about this before. There's a long post up on my Facebook page, actually, that I wrote a few months ago about why I think it's just time to put that whole thing to bed. The idea of being proud of that is something that it's not even that I don't understand it. I don't accept it. It's 2020. Y'all got your asses kicked, 145 years ago. It's time to get over it and move on. Okay. The South is not going to rise again. And if you think this idiot orange flake in the White House right now is some sort of indicator that you're coming back, it isn't. What that is an indicator of the demons screaming as it leaves. Okay. This is the last gasp of stupidity and bigotry in this country, and I'm not sad to see it go. So that's how that goes. Congratulations to the USMC for making that decision. Well played, gentlemen. And so the other thing, we've got Mike Pence. Vice President Mike Pence was tasked with the command and control of the coronavirus response at the federal level, including the PR handling. Of course, if you're Donald Trump, who's a raging narcissist and sociopath, every problem is a PR problem. And if it's not a PR problem, then it's not a problem. So Mike Pence has been sent out to deal with this. And of course, whether he'll actually bother addressing it or not, the reality is that his boss, Mr. Trump, I just refuse to call that man President Trump. His boss is the one that instituted a hiring freeze at the Centers of Disease Control a couple years ago, including the Pandemic Response Unit. He defunded the National Institutes of Health, et cetera, et cetera. Mike Pence has his own interesting history with viral outbreaks. A few years ago, when he was governor of Indiana, There was a HIV and hepatitis C outbreak in a little town called Austin in Scott County, down in the middle of the state. And so his health advisors kept telling him, you know, let's set up some clean needle exchanges and stop this from happening. And he dragged his feet and he refused to do it. And he refused to do it. And as a direct result, new HIV infections in Scott County at one point were hitting 22 per week, which is more than New York City. Nearly 300 people ended up infected with HIV because Mike Pence refused to do anything about it. So, you know, I know that Mr. Pence is a devout Christian, and I guess all I can say is that he's finally going to get his wish, because, boy, I'll tell you what, I'm an atheist, and I have been for a long time, but when I heard he was the one that was in control of this response, I started praying. Okay, let's go ahead and move into a little more serious and meaningful stuff here. I want to talk about this coronavirus thing. I know it's on a lot of people's minds, and it is an important thing that's going on around here. It is killing people, and it is something that we need to be aware of and how to respond to it. So I want to talk in some technical detail about that, and maybe, you know, hopefully help you understand some of the information that you are going to be seeing come out about this over the next few weeks. Excuse me. Ironically enough, I'm dealing with a really bad head cold myself. You're worried about two things with any kind of a disease outbreak like this, and that is, the first is communicability, how it can spread, and how well and how fast it can spread, and the other, of course, is mortality, how many people that are infected by this virus will it kill, okay? And there is math by which to measure this. I am not an epidemiologist, and I'm not even a biologist, and so you'll have to forgive me for, speaking in lay terms if you actually are an expert on the subject, but I'm going to try to make this as painless as possible for those of you who may know more about it than I do. For those of you who know less about it than I do, communicability, virulently a disease is transmitted is measured by a factor that is called R-naught. It's displayed as a capital R and a sub-zero. A disease, measles, for instance, has an R-naught of 12 to 18. And so what this measures is how many other people the average infected person will infect while they are contagious, right? And so the average person with measles, which is incredibly virulent, the average person with measles is going to infect somewhere between 12 and 18 other people. The HIV virus is around 7. The R-naught on HIV is around 7. The R-naught on the coronavirus right now, and I want to be clear that it's very difficult to get solid numbers on this because you're working with a moving target and they haven't seen it before. There's not studies. All they can work with is the live data as it happens. The R-naught right now is estimated between 1.4 and 4, and that was as of a few days ago. So each person is going to infect somewhere between 1.4 people and 4 other people. Now, an R-naught less than 1 means that the virus basically won't spread. It will, but it won't continue reaching out. Each person who has it will infect less than one other person. And so eventually that disease will die out. When it breaches 1, then you're talking about a spreading disease, okay? And right now, like I said, they don't know for sure exactly where that number is, but they estimate it's between 1.4 and 4. This does make it a genuine risk. There's a good chance, and this is, by the way, this is about the same scale that SARS was on, okay? And so there is a good chance that this is going to spread, and that it's going to spread globally, at least in some concentrated areas and pockets. This is not The Stand, okay? I'm a huge Stephen King fan, and The Stand is one of my favorite novels. And by way of comparison, right, the R-naught of the superflu virus in that book would have been calculated somewhere northwards of probably 25. The mortality of COVID-19? I wrote it down here someplace, and then I lost it. But anyway, the mortality rate, the number of people percentage of people who get this disease that will die from it. This is the important number. Right now, again, the data is very, very tough to measure, but right now the estimates are ranging between 2 and 15%. So out of every 100 people that get this virus, somewhere between 2 and 15 of them will die. It is a serious illness. It's not Captain Trips. We're not all about to go meet Mother Abigail and Randall Flagg or any of that good stuff. But it is a very serious illness, especially, you know, if you're compromised or if you have existing respiratory problems like COPD, things like that. And so you need to be aware, and you need to be on top of this stuff. The number one thing that I want to communicate to you, and I'm not hearing this in the news, by the way, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to say it out loud and make sure you hear it. The number one thing that I want to communicate to you about this is if you are in any way immunocompromised, if you're HIV positive or on antiretrovirals of any kind, if you have COPD or respiratory issues of any kind, emphysema, tuberculosis, any of that stuff, you need to get to a doctor now, okay? Call your doctor, make an appointment, talk to them about possibly even getting a prescription for antivirals right now before this thing hits, if they're willing to do that. I don't even know if it's legal to do that because I'm not a doctor. But if you can, be prepared ahead of time. Do not try to react to this after you already have it, because then it's going to be a problem and you're liable to end up in the hospital. You know, my mom suffered with COPD. I probably got a touch of it myself. My sister-in-law has a pretty decent case of it. And, you know, she's at serious risk. If this thing spreads like wildfire, so to speak, and I mean, we live in a petri dish, right? They've got six kids under 12. And so if this thing spreads, the probability approaches 100% that it's going to spread into this household. And so for her and for other people like her, again, who are dealing with, respiratory illnesses and chronic respiratory problems, who are compromised with their immune system, either because of an HIV infection or because you're on chemotherapy or you have some other issue that makes it, difficult or impossible for you to have good immunity. It's really super, super important. And I mean, it may save your life. No joke, no bullshit, no hype, no, it may save your life to reach out to your doctor now, make an appointment, go see them, lay hands on whatever you can that will help protect you from this. Beyond that, go out now and do your grocery shopping if you can, right? Get yourself prepared. If you are compromised in any way already, get yourself prepared for the possibility that it may be in your best interest to not leave home for 2 to 4 weeks, possibly even longer, but I don't think most of us are in a position to prepare for much more than that, if we can manage that much. Make sure you've got good communication open. Make sure you've got somebody you can call if you get so sick that somebody needs to come and take you to the hospital. I can't stress how important this is. I don't think that this is going to be, a big panic thing, but the way to stop it from becoming a big panic thing is to treat it like one before it becomes one, right? Which is what we saw with SARS. There was an immediate response from governments all over the world. They clamped down. They did everything they could to stop the thing from spreading and to treat it where it was, and they were able to contain that. Right now, they're not containing this very well, and I think probably some of you have seen, the Iranian vice president was literally on television trying to reassure people while he was starting to display symptoms of being infected with this virus. And 24 hours later, he was. They made the announcement. You know, the Iranian government has said publicly that their vice president is infected with the coronavirus. And it doesn't look very pleasant because he sent out a video. And he was not looking good, man. So, like I said, the major, 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 major importance here. Get in touch with your doctor. Find out what you can do in terms of getting in there and finding any kind of preventative medicine. One thing that you're going to see a lot of here is safety masks, okay? And I don't know if I've still got the article up. I don't think so. I did a little bit of research on this earlier. And so the key thing that you want to talk about, right, just a little floppy, you know, air mask, like an auto body painter would use in a paint shop to stop from huffing too many fumes, is not going to cut it. Okay, you need serious quality respirators, respirator masks that cover your nose and your mouth, make a tight seal around the area. It's get used to it. You're going to have to lose the beard, okay? If you wear makeup, you're probably going to not bother because it's just going to smear it and mess it up anyway, okay? The big thing that I want to put in your ear about that is what they call the micron pass level. And these are rated at either, they're rated at various numbers, but the higher safety masks are rated at N95, N99, and N100, right? So an N95 respirator mask means that it prevents 95% of the particles the diameter of the masks or the size that the mask protects against from passing through, okay? Anything less than an N95 mask is a decoration. It's not going to do you any good at all with this. Okay, so please don't bop out to, you know, Menards or Home Depot and think that your little wood shop face cover is going to do the job. It will not. Okay, if you are worried enough to buy the mask, go ahead, spend the money, the extra money. And again, that key phrase is N95 micron pass level. Absolute minimum. If you can get the 99 or the 100, get it. Get rid of the beard and mustache, right? Because if you got a face mask on, it's not going to do you any good if you've got these little hairs opening up slots on the side where these virus particles can pass through, right? Anything less than that, if you're not going to take off the facial hair, if you're going to continue to wear makeup, if jewelry is going to be another big one, right? If you have a lip piercing or something like that, anything that's going to interfere with that mask, making a good tight seal around your face, a good tight seal, anything that interferes with that compromises the mask and you might as well not be wearing it. Okay. So definitely wanted to keep that in mind. Let me bop back over here to my stream, make sure I don't have any comments waiting. There we go. And I wanted to have that conversation with y'all because I love you guys and I want to make sure that this is not something that hurts us and does major damage. And like I said, you know, right now they're estimating with an R out of 1.4 to 4, they don't have any idea what the natural resistance to this thing is because it's so new, right? There's no way to determine whether you or I are susceptible to this virus until we're exposed to it. And they haven't done that testing. They haven't had the chance. And so you have to assume the worst case scenario on that and assume that every person who comes into contact is completely susceptible to the virus. And that means that, you know, potentially it's going to hit just about everybody, right? Especially in a world with, you know, easy worldwide jet travel and so on and so forth. And with a mortality rate between 2% and 15%, 2% doesn't seem like much, but, you know, 2% of 300 million people, you know, that's 6 million people, right? Is that right? I think that's right. So you're talking, you know, if everybody in this country gets this disease, potentially a minimum of 6 million people will die from it. That is a big deal. And I don't want anybody to be one of them. I don't want anybody to die from this. You know, this is outside of my normal bailiwick, so to speak. And, you know, I usually focus on the social issues, the political issues, the communication issues. And one of the things that I really do have to say is if you are of the stripe of person who's constantly going on about how terrible the government is and how we need small government, okay? The fact that right now we're relying on South Korea to create a vaccine for this, that's a direct result of that mindless stupidity, okay? And I really, really hope that, you know, staring something like this in the face gives a few of you pause for thought and gives you a second to think, because that was Trump's reasoning, right? That's why he froze hiring at the CDC, including the pandemic response unit. Because small government, right? And I don't want to go off on a tangent about, you know, modern monetary theory and government, blah, 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 blah. I don't, that's not important right now. What is important is for you to understand that government is not the problem. Bad government is the problem. And the best way to get bad government is to refuse to have one. Okay. And if I may be permitted the tangent within my own show, I think it's about time we started learning stuff like this. I see all the time these sorts of blanket rabble-rousing statements about how terrible the government is, how terrible. Folks, we live in a democracy. Our government, and so help me God, if somebody jumps into my comments and tells me we live in a democratic republic, I'll slap the piss out of you. Okay? Our government reflects who we are. We choose our government. Okay? If our government sucks, it's because we chose people that suck to run it. And one of the reasons, one of the biggest reason probably that our government does have problems getting things done is because we continue to insist on kneecapping it. Okay? And that's the old, right, the government's so small you can drown it in a bathtub. Yeah, well, guess what, buddy? Right now you need the CDC, and that's the government. Right now you need the National Institutes of Health, and that's the government. And they are compromised as a direct result of that ignorant bullshit philosophy. Okay? If you hate government that much, stay the hell out of politics. Don't bother voting. Stay home and let those of us who have the wit and the information and the motivation to understand this stuff and to try to make decent decisions about how to implement a proper government, let us go do it. You stay home. Just stay out of the conversation, okay? And if you imagine yourself to be an anarchist or whatever, fine. Just stay home. Let the adults handle it, because you are hurting people, and this is a great illustration of why. And I'm not stuttering, and I'm not making this up. This is pure numbers, okay? With an R-naught, with a communicability of 1.4 to 4 people per infected person, if this disease gets out into the wild, unchecked, and infects the broad population, the United States right now, at best case scenario, stands to see 6 million dead. I don't want you to be one of them. Go out and get that N95 mask if you can swing it and you can find it. Get an N99 or get an N100 mask. Shave the beard off. Leave the makeup at home. See your doctor if you are in any way immunocompromised. If you have any kind of ongoing respiratory problems or infections or any of that stuff. Or even people who are dealing with moderate to severe type 2 diabetes. You heal slow. Your immune system is compromised. See your doctor. Do it now. Do it now. Okay? If you don't have a doctor, but you have some kind of access, go to a clinic tomorrow. All right? This isn't an emergency room thing yet, and I don't want it to be one for you. Go talk to your doc. Go talk to your healthcare professionals. Find out what you can do to protect yourself if you are in a vulnerable class. That's senior citizens. That's babies. That's immunocompromised individuals, people who are living with HIV and other immune system disorders. That's anybody that's on again, respiratory diseases, COPD. Please, 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 I would much, much rather you be pissed off at me because you spent $600 to go to the doctor and it turned out you didn't need to than because you're dead. Okay? And that really is the possibility that we're looking at right now. I'm not saying it's panic time. Again, this is not the stand. All right? This is not even close to that level. It's not going to wipe the world out. We're not all going to have to go meet Randall Flagg. But it does have the potential to be incredibly devastating. Okay? And you know what? Just to make sure I've got the math right. Let me make sure I've got that. We have roughly 300,000 people in the United States, or 300 million people in the United States, right? So 2% of that is 6 million people. And that's the best case scenario, right? Mortality of this could be as high as 15%. So if you go to 15% of 3 million, that's 45 million potential fatalities from this disease. You want to talk about watching the stock market take a dive? The last 5 days is going to look like a flat road. And we've lost 10% on the stock market in the last 5 days. Over 10%. Okay? And those numbers are just for the United States, right? What's global population? 7 billion? Right? So 15% of 7 billion is just a shade over 8 billion people that potentially could die from this if it is as virulent and as dangerous as it appears to be, and if it gets to its maximum potential spread. 8 billion people dead within the next couple of months. Please get to a doctor, okay? I'm sorry, I don't mean to be so heavy, but this is heavy shit. This is real stuff, man. You need to be careful. You need to be aware, and you need to be engaged, and you need to be proactive. Okay? I don't want to lose anybody. So, again, I'm going to hit the high points on this. Number one, with the coronavirus, has a communicability, what they call an R-naught, of 1.4 to 4. That means for every person that has this disease, they have the potential to affect between 1.4 and 4 other people, okay? By way of comparison, measles, it has an R-naught of 12 to 18. HIV has an R-naught of around 7. As of right now, the best information we have on this indicates that mortality rate for infected individuals on of this coronavirus is between 2 and 15%. If everybody gets it, that's a lot of dead people, okay? So get out, do what you need to do, talk to your healthcare professional, get a respirator, face mask respirator, right? Make sure you're covered. Make sure you've got it under control, especially if you are in any way vulnerable, okay? I guess that's that. So that's my little public service lecture for you. And I hope that that you take it seriously, because believe me, this is not the kind of thing that I would just come up with and, try to throw at you because I'm trying to scare you. I don't need to scare you that bad, and I sure as hell don't need the traffic that bad, okay? So I'm getting a warning here, boss. Stream's current bitrate lower than recommended. So, yeah, I don't know what that's telling me other than maybe my outflow sucks right now, and I can't do anything about that. So let me get back to my show notes for the day. All right. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about... yesterday, the United States Congress passed the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act, which officially makes lynching a federal hate crime. Okay, 4 people voted against it. Other than that, it carried unanimously. As it happens, one of the representatives who voted against that was Justin Amash, who represents a district right up the road from me. And he's the fellow that left the Republican Party a couple of months ago in protest of Donald Trump, right? So he's had kind of some shallow, some support from the shallow thinking base, right? The people who just read memes and headlines and that's all they know about the news. They go, oh yeah, man, Republicans turn their back on Trump, yay! Okay, well, the guy's a dick, and he had voted against that bill. And his argument was the typical sort of, right-winger, pseudo-libertarian argument of, well, we already have laws, and if we don't enforce them, then we need just enforce the laws that we've got, and we don't really need this extra thing. People like that don't get it at all. Ooh, that's hot. The point of this law, I feel, was not to create a new hate crime statute in the United States or to have some sort of way to punish somebody who engages in this behavior. What it was really about was sending a message both to the president and to the people, that this ongoing rapid increase in xenophobic aggression and violence is going to have to stop. Okay. Since really since, you know, when Barack Obama got elected, a small but significant contingent of the, you know, the bigot brigade kind of lost their brains, what few they had, and got real crazy. And so you saw a slight rise in that kind of xenophobic behavior and you know, bigotry, especially against African-Americans. And of course, since 9/11, you know, Middle Eastern Americans and especially, you know, people who were, you know, visibly professing Muslims became a huge target of that kind of stupidity. And you saw that rise a little bit. Of course, the anti-Muslim sentiment was born of 9/11 and the ignorance involved there. But when Obama was elected, a lot of the bigots and white supremacist types really lost their shit and started getting stupid. And then Trump comes along, and to these people, that's just, man, that validates the hell out of them. They just, oh, man, oh, yeah, that proves it, boy. Yeah, the South is going to rise again, and we're all big and bad, and blah, 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 and we're going to show you and put you in your place. And that tells you what this country is really about, which is not what this country is really about, because if it was, I wouldn't be in it. But so we passed this law basically to honor Emmett Till and to send a social message, right? And so I was in a conversation about this, and just a very casual, you know, conversation among friends online, and I made a remark about basically what I just said, that this was more symbolic than functional. And I said out loud that, you know, I thought that there hadn't really been a lynching in this country in you know, 30, well, I think what I said was 40 to 50 years. Okay. Another friend of mine, who is not a jerk and not a bad person and not a bad guy, and I don't hate him and I'm not angry at him and I'm not trying to, you know, prove him wrong or any of that crap. But he jumps in and says, you know, he starts saying this and that and, you know, what about this and what about that and what about this event? And what about that event? You know, kind of, you know, gave me a little ego ding and, you know, I thought you were more thoughtful than this and sort of that sort of thing. And so, the first friend mentioned Matthew Shepard, okay, and Matthew Shepard's case was, and all these cases, you know, are just outrageously hateful, ignorant, stupid, pathetic, disgusting things, tragic and horrific and outrageous, and enraging. Okay, I personally, I have a big trigger when it comes to bullies. Right, I've always been that guy. Like, the only people who deserve to treat people to be treated like that are the people who want to treat other people like that. Right, and that kind of goes back to my Orwell's Boot thing about, you know, some people want to eliminate Orwell's Boot, and some people want to wear it, and it's those second people that you got to watch out for. Right. So my friend mentioned Matthew Shepard, and I conceded that point, even though didn't really, I don't feel like that rose to lynching, and I'll explain why in detail in a minute, but I let it go. But then when this guy, this other fellow stepped in and, you know, made a pretty long post that included some kind of personal jabs, I felt like it was time for me to take a closer look, right? Because, I mean, I am a mixed race man, but I look white, I pass for white, and frankly, I generally think of myself as white in my day-to-day life, right, because the way I look, I've got, you know, straight hair, all that other stuff, my Native American background and African American background, and yes, I do have an African American background. There's a book on a shelf right behind me, that I could dig out if we wanted to go that route, I don't go through the things that black people have to deal with in terms of bigotry and in terms of prejudice. And so functionally, I'm a white guy. So maybe there's something I'm missing. And that would bother me. That does bother me. That possibility bothers me, right? Because I do very much believe in social justice and racial justice. And I don't want to be that privileged white guy who thinks that because I don't have a problem, there's no problem, right? That's the kind of people that I'm doing this whole thing. Everything that I do is intended to kill that way of thinking. you know? So I started digging into it, and I actually ended up writing a long article over on Medium for it. So the first thing I wanted to talk about, what was my perception of lynching prior to my research, all right? And the three big points here are, you know, what is lynching? What is hate crime? What's the difference? And what difference does it make? Why does it matter? Okay, so taking it from the top, before I did any research at all, I wrote down my definition of lynching just as an honesty check. And this is what I came up with. Lynching is a hate crime that is generally a racially motivated, violent attack by a crowd of usually white racists against usually black victims that generally involves hanging a person in a public place, either because they were black or because they openly supported black rights, and is generally carried out without legal authority. Okay, that was my internal conception of lynching before I started doing any research, before I looked up any definitions in Google or any of that stuff. That was how I thought of lynching, was those 10 things. Hate crime, racially motivated, violent attack, crowd, hanging, generally black victims, generally done in public, generally done without legal sanction. Okay. And so I started to dig through this and to look at it, and the specific cases that were mentioned in the course of the conversation were Sandra Bland and Philando Castile and James Byrd, and again, these are all unquestionably hate crimes. I have absolutely no contention with that, and by no means do I mean to minimize or rationalize those crimes by saying that they aren't lynching, okay? I'm going to get into the whys of that later, but I don't want to get off on tangents and confuse the conversation, so just stay with me, okay? So this other friend who came in and mentioned Bland, Castile, and Byrd also posted a meme, which I did some research on, right? This meme was of a black man hanging from a tree, and it's, you know, you can see a white, you know, FBI agent or policeman or something like that wearing gloves in front of him, this investigating crime scene, and the meme caption says, "This happened in 2010, but if I mention that, I'm race baiting," okay? All right, I get your point, but let's talk about some of this. First and foremost, that picture was of a man named Otis Byrd, who was found hung in Mississippi, I believe it was Mississippi or Missouri, near his home, hanging from a tree, African-American man, and this was in 2010 that this happened. The problem is that Otis Byrd, that whole thing was investigated because, of course, I mean, Jesus, you find a black guy hanging from a tree in the South, the first thing you think is hate crime. Somebody lynched this guy, right? And so the local NAACP worked out. The FBI came in right away. They did a 5-year investigation in this case. I mean, they went through it with a super fine tooth comb. And the conclusion they came to was that it was a suicide. Okay. Which is absolutely tragic, but it's certainly not a lynching. Okay. And again, why does that matter? I'm getting there. All right. When you talk about lynching, to me, the big key things there, the race of the victim is negotiable, okay? Other minorities have been targeted. White people have been targeted. As I was researching, the NAACP's website has a big article up about it between, you know, 1882 and 1968. Roughly a quarter of the lynchings that happened to white people, okay? So I'm flexible on that, right? And I'm flexible to the idea that that other sorts of minority individuals can be targeted, such as LGBT people, can be targeted for lynching, right? But the key thing there is it's a mob, a lynch mob, right? That's the big hang up for me when you start talking about a lynching. And the reason that that point is important is because it speaks to that broader social issue. When you've got even, you know, three or four people that are engaged in hateful white supremacist violent behavior, you've definitely got a problem, but it's a problem with four people. If you're in one town and you've got 15 or 20 people in a crowd that are going after one person because they're black or they're gay or something, there's a bigger issue going on there. Right? There's a problem in that community. And so as you go back, I remembered, it was kind of the thing that started me doing the research on this once it dawned on me that maybe I should. There was a fellow named Yusuf Hawkins back in 1989 who was attacked and beaten to death in New York City. And this was done by a crowd of people. I didn't get enough research done to tell you how many people were convicted, but there were, you know, allegedly 20 to 40 people that were involved in this attack. Okay, that is a lynching. Even though he wasn't hung, that is a lynching, okay? And the motivation for that attack was he was mistaken for a black man who had been dating a white woman in the neighborhood. Also in New York City in 1986, you had a gentleman named Michael Griffith who was attacked by a crowd of white people because he was in a white neighborhood at the wrong time. Again, a crowd of people, 10 to 20 people involved in this attack. That was a lynching. Okay. Willie Turks, also in New York City. He was, I think he worked for Metro, the Transit Authority there. And again, was in the wrong neighborhood at the wrong time, so to speak, and was attacked by a crowd of white racists and beat to death. That was a lynching, okay? Why does it matter to separate these things? First and foremost, like I said, just on the matter of defining our words, when you got two or three people involved, right? The James Byrd case involved three people. Matthew Shepard case involved two attackers. The Philando Castile case involved two people. Sandra Bland was killed by one person. Okay. And again, that's not to say that this is somehow less or that it isn't horrible or that it isn't wrong or any of that stuff. I am not in any way trying to condone, minimize, rationalize, justify any of that stuff. What I'm talking about is the big point that I'm getting to, which is why we don't want to reach for those high valence words every single time we want to make a point. Okay. When you turn around and take something like the Bland case or the Castile case and you try to attach that to this concept of lynching, what happens now is anybody out there who is ill-bred and ignorant enough to try to be looking for excuses to claim that the concept of hate crime is invalid or that people make these things up, you have just validated those people. Because now they can point to what you said and go, see, I told you they lie. These liberals lie about this stuff. They just make this stuff up. Right, they're calling this a lynching. This one was shot by one person. She wasn't lynched, right? Here's this meme of this dead guy. That guy killed himself. They're lying. They don't care about the truth, right? You're giving them a leg to stand on when you do shit like that. Same thing that, you know, same problem that I have with these people that, you know, you run out and make these, circulate false criticisms of Donald Trump. Right? Well, congratulations, dumbass. You just validated his whole fake news narrative. Duh. Because now he can point to what you said and go, well, see, they lie. They just say anything they want to about me. You don't have to believe them. And his followers believe it. And that's the important thing, is because now you've got people who maybe aren't so bright. And they're thinking, well, gee, is this really a thing or is it not? Maybe I don't know for sure, and I don't really have the facts. But now my buddy shows up and he points. He says, well, you see, you just handed them their argument. You just loaded the gun. Okay. The second layer of that is that by insisting on attaching that high valence label, that emotionally powerful label, to try to spur outrage about an event like the death of Sandra Bland or Philando Castile or Trayvon Martin, when you attach that additional label to it, there is a subtext that the event in itself, you don't believe that was bad enough to be outraged about, right? There is a level at which that communication, that message comes with it. The idea that the fact that Trayvon Martin got murdered because he was walking home and some bigot shot him is not sufficient reason to be pissed. He had to have been lynched. You got to have that label. You're undermining the point. Right? When you do that, when you're not honest, when you try to get into the hyperbole, and when you try to play the games of look how horrible this is, it was terrible. It is terrible. It's terrible on its own. Let it stand on its own. When you start throwing in this extra verbiage and these additional attempts to trigger people and clickbait people, which is what that meme is. Right? I don't even use the phrase race baiting in conversations. Literally, I think this may be the first time I've ever said that phrase out loud in my life. It's not how I think. Okay? And it's not race baiting. It's click baiting. It's trying to get people outraged so they'll click on your little Facebook page and throw a like and jack up your numbers. And it's lying. And it is an absolute, there is no question that that kind of behavior absolutely dishonors the victims of lynching. It dishonors the victims of the violence that wasn't lynching, that you're saying was lynching, right? Because you're sending another message there too. And that message is you don't care about Sandra Bland, the woman who died. What you care about is Sandra Bland, the image, the icon, the concept of a woman who was a victim of racial injustice and violence. And you don't care about that anymore, right? You care about the iconography and what power you can gain from that. And how you can manipulate people and push them around and make them angry and make them react. You completely have lost sight of the fact that a human being was brutally murdered for really, I mean, God, there's never a great reason for a murder. But for that reason, that's not even a reason to give somebody a dirty look. There's plenty there to be outraged about without having to invoke Billie Holiday and without having to invoke the Klan and the hangings and all of the you know, mental pictures that come along with that idea of lynching, right? You're dishonoring her when you do that. And you're dishonoring the people who were lynched because now you're also detracting from that experience. Right? You're minimizing that experience and making it seem like less than it was. Because you're broadening that definition and watering it down. It's like referring to every bomb as a nuke. Every bomb is not a nuke. And every bomb is horrible. And everybody that dies from a bomb is a tragedy. But every bomb is still not a nuke. And when you call every bomb a nuke, pretty soon people think, you're full of shit. And maybe so many people are full of shit that maybe nukes aren't that bad of a deal. That's what I'm trying to get across to you, okay? And it's a very, very difficult and nuanced point to make. And I definitely recognize that some people are going to get about 5 seconds into what I'm saying here and just get pissed off and shut it off. And I can't help those people. They'll have to catch up later, okay? Those of you who hang in and wait for the actual point. The point is, when you engage in that behavior, and again, this is just an example. This is just a sample of, this is one instance of a case where this happens, right? It is the same thing when you lie about Donald Trump. It is the same thing when you make things up to try to make them more outrageous than they actually are. What you're saying, first of all, is that whatever it is that you're pissed off about, you are kind of questioning whether that's justified to be pissed off about. You're not sure that just that thing is enough. You are admitting and you are saying to the world, I'm not sure if Trayvon Martin being shot by a bigot while he was peacefully walking home at night is enough of a reason for me to be really mad. It's got to be a lynching. We've got to attach that label to it. We've got to attach all that internal imagery to it to make it enough. Really? I know that's not what you're thinking, but that's the message that you're sending. Words matter. They matter a lot. Okay? This is why, you know, there was periodically I'll go off on tangents about these trolls that were running liberal pages that put me through a lot of hell a few years ago with, you know, blackballing and stalking and harassment and stuff. And one of them was a guy by the name of Steve Ahern, and he ran a page called Stop the World, the Teabaggers Want Off, I think it was called. And he got to the point where literally all he did was kick out memes with fake quotes on them. Well, you dumb shit. You literally just validated Donald Trump's stump speech. Because now 63 million idiots are pointing at your memes going, you see, they lie. They make this stuff up. They're wrong. Donald Trump can't be that bad. It's just the whiny liberals making things up again. They're stupid. They don't know the facts. They don't know what they're talking about. They just want to say bad things about Donald Trump. That idiot validated that whole narrative and kept doing it after I and several other people called him on it. And of course, the world being what it is, he ends up with, you know, 250,000 people following him, while the people who are actually honest and have some integrity about what they do are stuck at a couple thousand. But that's a whole different conversation. Right? Words matter, man. If you have to lie to get your point across, you're not qualified to make the point. You need to shut up. You need to let somebody who is qualified to make the point make the point. Okay? Because believe me, I can sit here all day long and explain to you why the deaths and the murders of Sandra Bland and Philando Castile and James Byrd and Michael Donald, who is another man that was murdered, that's often called a lynching and really wasn't. And in some cases, in the case of Byrd and Donald, they're cited in Wikipedia and some other, you know, publicly edited resources as lynchings. And I completely disagree. And I think it is a dishonor to them to lump them into that. I think you are sending the message that you don't think that being dragged behind a truck by three white supremacists to your death and having your body left laying in a cemetery in public, you don't think that's bad enough. We've got to call it lynching and bring that big symbolism and bring that big emotion into it. Brother, if you aren't emotional enough just hearing that a man was dragged to death behind a truck for being black, you got a problem. And if you don't understand why that is a huge issue and how you are empowering bigots and white supremacists by pushing that, you've got a bigger problem. Because you're out there and you think you are helping a cause and you are hurting it badly. You are undermining the very thing that you think that you are trying to support. That is the point. That is why it matters to have this discussion. Okay? I don't want to be out here trying to have this. Like I said, I know damn well people are going to hear this, and there's going to be a segment of folks that get about halfway into it and go, oh, he's full of shit. He doesn't know what he's talking about. What difference does it make? It sounds like something he'd say. I hear that one a lot when I see fake quotes online. Well, it sounds like something he'd say. Yeah, but it isn't. And now every slack jaw yokel that supports that bullshit is pointing at you going, see, there's the proof. They lie. If you can't tell the difference, shut up. You're hurting people. And that's not intended as a direct shot at the guy that posted that meme. I'm not trying to be angry personally at him, but I am very, very angry at that mentality because it hurts people. It kills people. Okay? Words matter. And that's my last word on that subject for now. It is getting towards the top of the hour. We're just about wrapped up here. I want to revisit this coronavirus thing again and hit you with it again. Right now, what we know about this coronavirus is that it has a communicability, which is measured in a metric that is called R-naught. It's R sub-zero. A R-naught less than one means that the disease is communicated by each person to less than one person. And so it will die out very quickly. It won't spread. Over one, that means that it is capable of spreading and spreading out. Right now, the estimated R-naught for the coronavirus for COVID-19 is between 1.4 and 4, with the latest information that I was able to find. And that data is changing by the moment because they're working with a moving target. Okay. So this means that each person that has that virus is potentially going to affect between 1.4 and 4 people. That means it's going to spread and it's going to grow. Okay, we can contain and we can take steps to make sure that it doesn't spread any farther than it needs to. But especially with the stunningly inept clown show that's going on in the White House right now, and the ridiculous damage that's been done to our Centers for Disease Control and National Institutes of Health, you, the individual, are going to need to have a grip on this information, right? So, by way of comparison, again, measles has an R-naught of between 12 and 18. HIV has an R-naught of around 7, okay? Every person that has measles is going to infect 12 to 18 other vulnerable people who have measles. The key thing here is we have no idea what the natural resistance to this strain of coronavirus is. We don't know if there is any. We don't know if half the population is resistant. We don't know if any of the population or most of the population is resistant. What we do know is that each person who has it, assuming that everybody is susceptible to it, every person who has it can give it to between 1.5 and 4 more people. What we also know right now is that the estimated mortality rate of this disease is between 2 and 15%, which does not sound like a lot, but if we are all susceptible to this disease and it spreads pandemically, you're talking about losses in the United States of somewhere between, 6 million and 100 million people. 6 million I can't remember the number now. Let me pull it back up because I've got it right here. 2% of, and yeah, 6 million was 2% of 300,000. 15%, I should know this. I'm an idiot. I used to be able to do this stuff in my head. I'm too tired right now. 45 million, okay? Yeah, duh. 3 times 15 is 45, idiot. So 300 million people in the United States, if worst case scenario, as we understand the numbers right now, this disease is 100% communicable and it has the highest estimated mortality rate of 15%. You're talking about 45 million people dead in the United States within the next couple of months. Okay. How do we stop that from happening? Number one, if you are a member of any kind of compromised class, if your immune system is compromised or you have, if you're HIV positive, if you're on, antiretrovirals for some reason, if you have any kind of chronic respiratory infection like COPD, emphysema, any of that stuff, get to the doctor right now. If you are a senior citizen, contact your doctor. If you have infants in the house, contact your doctor immediately. Get in touch with somebody and get the best possible advice. And if they say there's nothing you can do about it, find a different doctor. Because there is something you can do about it. If they don't at least tell you, go out, buy face masks, and make sure that they're rated at N95, which I'll talk about in a second again. If they don't give you at least that information, you're dealing with a shit doctor and you need to move on. You need to do it right now. Okay? So, the other thing, if you're going to be out, and if you have to go out, then you're going to see face masks. And a lot of people are already, I'm already seeing people trying to make money off of this, which actually makes me want to punch somebody right in the throat. if you're going to go out and buy a mask, the key thing that you want to look for is what they call an N number, and that tells you what percentage of the particles that mask is rated for are actually stopped by the mask. You want an absolute minimum of N95, right? And the letter N, by the way, has to do with oil resistance, which is not a factor here per se, unless you're working in an oil shop or around a lot of oil. In which case, do some research. It's online, and that'll tell you what the other letters are to go find and all that other stuff. But you want that 95. N95 is the absolute minimum. If you're wearing, a woodshop mask or something like that, you might as well have nothing on at all. It's a decoration. It's not doing you any good, okay? If you go to wearing face masks, shave. Don't wear makeup. Make sure you've got a good tight seal. Right? Make sure you're using that N95. If you can get one, get an N99 or even an N100, right? That is the measure of what percentage of the dangerous materials those masks filter out. 95% is going to keep you safe. 99, 100. Anything lower than that's a waste of time for this, okay? And the other thing is, if you are in a compromised subgroup, again, like people with, respiratory diseases or HIV, I would strongly recommend that you go stock up right now and plan to be in your house for an extended period of time. Extended period of time, meaning at least 2 to 4 weeks. Okay. And I understand that what I'm telling you, a lot of people can't do your best. Okay, I don't want to see this spread. I don't want to see this turn into the disaster that it could. And again, we're not talking about the stand. We're not talking about 99.9% of the people in the world dying, but we are talking about significant major casualties, major economic impacts, major disruptions to absolutely every function on Earth, and a whole lot of dead bodies. Worst case scenario, globally, this could be as many as 1 billion people dead. That's math. That's not bullshit. Okay? 1 billion. B. 45 million just in the United States. That's the population of the New York Metroplex 3 times over. This is serious. Protect yourself. Protect everybody around you. Okay? And that's it for me, folks. It is 2 minutes after 9 by my clock, which means I've been flapping my jaws at you here for an hour. And I didn't even look at... I didn't even notice. I see Haywood stopped in and said hi. Hello, Haywood. Thanks for stopping in. Sorry I didn't check you. I wasn't watching my chat tonight because I had so many notes that I wanted to make sure that I was getting to. But he did observe. Yeah, thank God there's a science denier in charge. Ooh, yay. Yeah, we're not going to pray this one away, folks. Forget it. I'm sorry. I know it's going to offend some people that are believers, and I don't mean for it to offend, but I also am not concerned with the fact that it offends. If you believe in God, then you better start believing that God gave you science and medicine for a reason, okay? Because you're not just putting yourself at risk. You're putting everybody else at risk, too. That includes my sister-in-law, who has COPD. That includes my beautiful, beautiful little niece, foster niece, who was born with some respiratory issues and just had some surgeries on her ears and stuff like that. You're putting other people at risk, man. Pull your shit together. Don't be so selfish. Don't be so egotistical. Don't be such a know-it-all. Do what you have to do to keep yourself safe, all right? Just as a reminder of the other big issue on this show tonight, stop bullshitting, right? Oh, Kurt, right on, man. Welcome aboard, brother. That Haywood is a friend of mine that I recognize by his real name, Kurt. Yeah, the whole, like I said, whether it's lynching or whether it's some or the other extremism that you're reaching for, like, oh, I got to sell this. I got to put this over. I got to make people angry about this. You know what? Let it rest on its merits, okay? The murder of Sandra Bland is disgusting, pathetic, and enraging all by itself without calling it a lynching, okay? And when you go for that, you're not only undercutting your point, I think you're dishonoring the victims. So, sorry, I guess that's going to be a little controversial and maybe not as friendly to some people as I should be trying to be, since, it's all about trying to get those likes and shares and everything, but You know what, folks? As much as I want to build an audience and as much as I want this thing to take off and I want people to hear what I have to say, I'm not going to sit here and bullshit you about it. I'm not going to blow smoke up your ass and tell you what you want to hear just so you'll like me. That's frankly not the audience I'm trying to cultivate. I'm trying to cultivate people who have the balls to hear something that they may not like and that may cause them to have some ego questions and to be able to stand up to that and deal with it honestly and forthrightly. If that's not you, you're not tall enough to ride this ride. So obviously Kurt / Haywood is in fact tall enough to ride this ride. So thank you to him for stopping by, certainly, and throwing the comments. Thanks to all of you who either came in while I was in another window and not paying attention, or who will watch the replay, and of course you folks who will listen to the podcast later. Reminding you once again that I am going to start putting out edited versions of these live streams, and so you can look for that. And let's go ahead and hit the usual high spots. Where can you find me, and how can you help me do what I do? Of course, my website is johnhenry.us. You can find me on Facebook at Facebook/johnhenryus, and as I'm one of seven administrators of I Loved to Wake Up in the Morning when Barack Obama was president. A couple hundred thousand people there stop by. You can find me on Twitter at JohnHenryU_US. I'm on YouTube, obviously, if you're watching the video, I'm right here, but if you're not, it's /JohnHenryUS. Fundraising, I have a PayPal at paypal.me/JohnHenryUS, and at patreon.com/JohnHenry. The Patreon campaign is not quite live yet, but it will be by the end of the week. And of course, you can find my podcast in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and everywhere that fine podcasts are distributed. Thank you once again very much, Kurt, and everybody else that has come through and commented, and to everybody out there who has supported me over the years. It's not always easy to go out every day and to remember to thank everybody individually, and when you're wrapped up in trying to produce content and everything like that, sometimes it seems like maybe you're not as appreciative as you could be. Believe me, I appreciate every single minute. I appreciate every single like and share, and I love you all. And there's a core group of you who has kept me motivated to keep doing this for a long time, and I hope you stick around, because this is the part where it starts getting good. So thanks a whole lot once again. I'm going to shut up and get the hell out of here. You all have a nice night, and we will see you tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern for another John Henry Show. Hey there, everybody. It's John Henry from johnhenry.us. Thank you for watching and stopping by my YouTube channel. Like the sign says, I am independent media, so I don't have a big PAC or an organization or a nonprofit that is behind me supporting this work. It is all me, and it is all you. So if you can help out, you can see the information here at the bottom of the screen that links to my various fundraising and crowdfunding sources, as well as the Facebook page and the Twitter and my website. Share it around, spread it around, and thank you very much once again for watching. Have a great day.